Tommy was asking me before services. He says, does an ant know what one of these things is? I said, no, not so much. We just have those big old mics that, you know, they have the big blaring PAs, and you're trying to listen when, you know, over top the generator. So anyway, we don't have to deal with that tonight. I'm not going to, unless I run out of class material, which I don't think I will. We're going to talk tonight about a subject called moral excellence. In Philippians chapter 4, Paul was telling the Philippian brethren in verse 8, he says, finally, brethren, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are of good report, if there be any virtue, and if there be any praise, think on these things. What I'm going to discuss tonight is something that I found in one of the books that the girls is using. And so it's not my thoughts, but I've added to it. And, you know, I'm the type of guy, as I was telling the ladies' class, or it's not just ladies' class anymore, it's the Wednesday morning class, that, you know, I'm a very practical type of guy, and I like things that really help to stick in our minds. As Christians, we need to know the Scriptures, but we also need to know how to put it in practice so that other people will read us like they would if they picked up the Bible. Many cases now is people are not going to pick up that Bible. They're going to read us. And so, what are they going to read? And moral excellence is something that, you know, all of us as Christians need to have. Now, this, I'm going to give you 22 items that was given to a young man by the name of Abram. And it was given to him by an older friend. And we're going to talk about these points, and I'm going to just add scriptures to it. I'm not going to do a lot of talking concerning, you know, what I think. We'll let the Lord, you know, tell us what He thinks. The very first one, and I'm going to have a list, some papers already printed up, and I'll put it in the back. So if any of you want a copy of it, you can have it for your own study. The very first one, never be idle. Never be idle. We're not talking about an engine. We're talking about ourselves and just sitting around. In Matthew chapter 20, verses 3 through 7, and I'm going to have the verses on this paper, but if you want to write, that's fine. I'm going to try to give you enough time if you want to find these to do that. But in Matthew chapter 20, verses 3 through 7, Matthew's account of what a parable that Jesus gave. And it begins in verse 3, and he went out about the third hour and saw others standing in the marketplace idle. And to them he said, go ye into the vineyard, and whatsoever is right I will give you. And they went their way. Again he went out about the sixth hour and the ninth hour and did likewise. And about the 11th hour he went out and found others standing. And he said unto them, why stand ye here all the day idle? They said to him, because no man had hired us. And he said to them, go ye also into the vineyard. Now, think about an older man telling a younger man, don't be idle. Don't be like what these men, you know, that, and this is sort of picturesque as far as what we see in Ghana, people sitting under what we call the gera or the pangola, doing nothing, playing games when they need to be working their minds and their backs instead of trying to dig up devilment. Men are the same, you know, wherever we look in the world. But we don't need to be idle. whether we're a young man or whether we're an old man, whether we're a young girl or an old woman, we still don't need to be idle. Matthew chapter 12, verses 36 and 37. The Lord said, "And I say to you that every idle word that men shall speak, they shall give an account thereof in the day of judgment. For by the words thou shalt be justified, and by thy words thou shalt be condemned." We don't need to be idle, folks. We need to have our minds going constantly, dealing with the Lord's Word. Number two, make few promises. Oh, let's not get into politics and the promises that are there, because Matthew chapter 5, verse 37. And by the way, if you have a comment, you just feel free to speak up. If I have to walk over there to you and give you my mic, I'll do it or shout it out. I do like folks to talk. Tim's back there with the big mic, and so we'll just do that. But feel free to chime right in. Matthew 5:37, "But let your speech be yea, yea, nay, nay. And whatever is more than these is of the evil one." So let your yes be yes, and let your no be no. And when you make a promise, be careful what you're promising. Because so many times now, think about it, folks. Somebody says, "Well, you know, I'm going to do this or that," and you turn around, you're waiting on them. And you may be waiting there the rest of your life because it's never going to get done. As Christians, we don't need to be that way. If we say we're going to do something, let's do it. If we don't think we can do it, let's just be wise enough to say, "I don't think I can get the job done. Let's get somebody else that can, you know, come in and do the job." This thing about promises. God, He promises us salvation. Do we want Him to buck on us? He never has allowed one of His promises to falter. He's always been truthful with us. I'm thinking of an example in Joshua chapter 9, verses 15 through 19. It talks about the Israelites when they came in, and the Gibeonites who had heard what had happened. The children of Israel had come in and had just were obliterating everyone that they were coming in contact with. The Gibeonites, they say, "Whoa, we got to cover ourselves. We don't want to perish like these other people." So they go and they make a pact with Joshua and with the princes of the children of Israel. Of course, it's through trickery, but you know, the thing is, it's one of those situations where they made a promise. And as you go into the scripture, in verse 19, "But all the princes said unto the congregation, We have sworn unto them by Jehovah, the God of Israel. Now, therefore, we may not touch them." Because, you see, they wanted to go in and attack them again. Or not again, but go in and attack them. No, you made a promise. As Christians, let's be careful what we're promising. If we make a promise, let's keep it. Are y'all agreeing with me, or y'all just sitting there thinking, "Yes, Dave, let's go ahead and get on with the class"? So we can. At least I do see a few smiles. What was that? You agree. Good. Good. Thank you. Thank you. Okay. Number three, always speak the truth. Always speak the truth. Proverbs chapter 8, verses 7 and 8. "For my mouth shall utter truth." Pardon me. "And wickedness is an abomination to my lips. All the words of my mouth are in righteousness. There is nothing crooked or perverse in them." Can you and I say that? We should be able to say it. We are getting into a time, and you know, nothing is changed under the sun. We think that we're going into really bad times, knowing all the doomsday people saying, well, you know, it's getting like Sodom and Gomorrah. I don't know. I didn't live there, but let me say this. There's always a rise and a fall in moral excellence and this kind of behavior. Whether the Lord is coming back, I don't know. The Lord doesn't know until His Father tells Him. But let's be sure that we always tell the truth to people. Let's try. There may be times when you can't tell the truth. I'm not saying that. There may be a time that you tell somebody that you're going to do something and you fully intend to do it and it doesn't get done. You're not willfully lying to somebody. That's what I'm trying to say. But we make a promise. Let's make it and let's tell the truth about it. If you can't do it, say, I can't do it. Or if you can do it, yeah, I'll do it. But then do it. And expect the same. Live within your income. Ha, 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 this is a good one. We're living in a time where everybody wants everything. And there are so many people that... Well, Steve, everybody likes to have money, don't they? You and I, we like to have money. You have to have money. But the problem is, think about the older folks. And some of you, I'm looking back there at you, Pepper, Sarah Pepper, and some of you that are a little bit older. You notice how I phrased that. You learn to do with less. And as you get older, then you do have more things that can come to you. But we are in a time where people expect everything to come to them now. Matthew chapter 18, verses 23 through 27. Jesus again gives us an example. He says, therefore, it is the kingdom of heaven likened unto a certain king who would make reckoning with his servants. And when he began to reckon, one was brought to him that owed him 10,000 talents. For as much as he had not wherewith to pay, his Lord commanded him to be sold, and his wife, and his children, and all that he had, and payment to be made. The servant therefore fell down and worshipped him, saying, Lord, have patience with me, and I'll pay thee all. And the Lord of that servant, being moved with compassion, released him and forgave him the debt. But you see, here again, you have a man that was living outside of his means. The Christian needs to use his money wisely. Be a little bit like my wife, Handy. I wish I could be a little bit more like her. She can make Washington scream bloody murder. And, you know, in the mission field, that really does help. Because sometimes you're working on a shoestring anyway. And you need to be able to use your money wisely. We've got, you know, thinking of, as a young man trying to give advice from an older guy to a younger, you know, try to live with what you have. It will eventually come. God will bless us if we do what's right. Also in Hebrews chapter 13, verse 5, be ye free from the love of money, content with such things as ye have. For himself hath said, I will in no wise fail thee, neither will I in any wise forsake thee. Now, this is common sense ideas, folks. And this is the kind of things that we need to try to get across to everyone now. It's not just to the younger people. We have people that are my age and older, and I'm 57. Jimmy, we're fixing to be 58 next week. Just me. You're going to be 38. Yeah, you said that the other night. I thought, oh, it could only be of that age again. But anyway, we've got to be free of the love of money. Brethren, and if you're visiting with us, you're not going to hear me preaching against people that have money and being rich. There's not a sin in being rich. Abraham, Job, Isaac, Jacob, Solomon, David, all of these men were filthy rich. But the money didn't have them. They had the money. Number five, never speak evil of anyone. Ephesians chapter 4, verse 31. Put away from you all bitterness and wrath and anger and wrangling and slander, together with all malice. Again, we all need to look at ourselves and see, you know, what are we saying about folks? Do you agree with me or disagree? Jimmy, do you agree with me? Both of you. Well, that's all right. I'm saying there's about five Jimmys here in the congregation. But anyway, we have to watch our tongues. If we watch our tongues, we're going to be in a lot better shape. We're not going to have to do any backtracking, are we, Ray? Because I see you back there watching me. I know you're thinking. Keep good company or none. 1 Corinthians chapter 15, 33. Do not be deceived. Evil companionship corrupt good morals. Evil communications, as some translations give. It's saying the same thing. When you're with somebody, you're communicating with them. What are you communicating back and forth? This is a problem. And you know, there was a man when I was growing up in Ohio. He was a farmer. That doesn't mean anything. That was just his profession. That man, he could not go anywhere without saying a cuss word about every third word. You know, come on. Let's get a command of the English language and be able to say things that are going to be able to help people. But when you're hanging around with people like that, it's going to rub off on you. And we can stand up here and say, oh, well, you know, it'll never happen to me. Hogwash. It will happen to you, because if you're working with a painter, you're going to get paint on you. If you're laying concrete with a guy who puts down concrete, you're going to get some of that concrete on you. If you're around people that are worldly, it's going to rub off on you. So don't think you're the exception to the rule. Live up to your engagement. Colossians 4:13, I can do all things to him that strengthens me. If we say that we're going to do something or we're going to try to do all that we can, let's do it. And yeah, it's easy. And let me tell you, this past week has told on me with my age a little bit, but you get, trying to get everything righted around and getting ready for us to go, and you get so many things going, you get tired, but you do need to persevere. You know, if you're going to continue, if you want to work for the Lord, keep on doing it. Sort of like we joke around with folks, you know, we'll rest when we get to heaven. And that's the way that it should be. Anyone have any comments? I'm up here preaching. I don't mean to be doing that. Yes. You wasn't blessed with a big mouth like me. Thank you. Well, you know, as we get older, it's easier for us to see some of these things. When we're younger, you know, you're thinking, well, you know, yeah, that old fuddy-duddy, you know, I've got my life to live, and, you know, it may change. You know, may not be that way, but older people, how do you think they got older? It wasn't because they went out and stood, you know, in front of a car and was killed. You know, it's because they were trying to look out for themselves. And folks, we need, and I know I'm sort of preaching to the choir again, as I said this morning in ladies' class, because we are, most of us are older, but we need to be able to give good advice like this to our kids, our grandkids, and others, you know, because they're not getting this kind of teaching. And it's, you don't have to be a preacher to be able to teach this stuff. We just need to, you know, we just need to practice it so that others can see it. The next one, number 8, never play games of chance. In 1 Timothy chapter 3, verse 3, no brawler, no striker, but gentle, not contentious, no lover of money. Because, you know, if you want to play the games, it's because you want the money. Well, if you want the money, go out and get you a good paying job and save yourself a lot of heartaches. Drink no intoxicating drinks. Romans chapter 14, verse 21, right it is not to eat flesh, nor to drink wine, nor to do anything in which thy brother doth stumble, and it's made to fall and is weak. Also, what we use in Ghana a lot of the time, because there they have a drink, it's called pito. And pito was made from guinea corn, which is sorghum, you know, the sorghum heads. For those of you that know about farming. Anyway, they'll take that, they call it guinea corn, and they brew this up. It can be alcoholic and it can be non-alcoholic. And so, you know, pito is a big thing for the funerals, and, you know, everybody's using it. Well, in Habakkuk chapter 2, verse 15, this is really a good verse, and we use that quite often. Woe to him who is giving drink to his neighbor, pouring out thy bottle and also making drunk in order to look on their nakedness. It's a little bit graphic, but it gets the job done, doesn't it? Because that's what happens. That drink will loosen that tongue and it'll loosen those clothes. And let's just get real. That's not what Christians are supposed to be about. Number 10, maintain good character above everything else. Proverbs 22:1. A good name is rather to be chosen than great riches, and loving favor rather than silver and gold. There's nothing that's better than having a good name. You may be dirt poor, folks, but you can have a good name and you can be proud of it. And believe you me, I know some people that are poor, and they do have a good name, and that's more than being rich. Number 11, keep your own secrets if you have any. That's a good one. Proverbs 11, chapter 11, verse 13. And if I'm going too fast, don't worry. I've got those verses, so I'm not giving you a lot of time. I want to be able to get through with this. A busybody is revealing secret counsel, and the faithful of spirit is covering the matter. A lot of good sense. That's what Proverbs is good about. You know, if you know somebody that can't keep a secret, don't tell them. They may be a church member. Well, you say, well, Steve, church members aren't supposed to be that way. That's exactly right, but people are people. Wise up. Realize that there are some people that you can't tell things to. And keep it quiet. And don't be saying things that are hurtful and harmful. You may hear something about somebody. Let it be at that. you know, and a lot of times it's not true. And don't repeat it, Marvin's saying. That's right. Because all that happens is you're repeating something that probably is not true. And it's hurtful, harmful to people's character. And character is something that we all need to have. Good character. Never borrow if you can possibly help it. Now, you may say, oh, we got somebody? Yes, sir.
Do you think have contributed the most to the decline of the morals in our country?
Personally.
Maybe someone in the audience would like to contribute.
Okay. And that's fine, too. One of the things that I think is the most contributing factor is no one fears God anymore. They don't think He exists. What are you thinking of? Bill Skipworth. She agrees again.
I think what you said, Romans chapter 1, where it talks about the general conditions of society and what society sinks down into when they don't retain God in their knowledge. The reason why things are the way they are now is because our society has rejected God. They don't respect the Bible. They don't respect the authority of His Word. As we can see with the homosexual movement that's going on now, Romans chapter 1 brings out that is the culmination of a society that has rejected God. And as people sink more and more into this moral abyss, it just proves God's point.
That's right.
One more thing I wanted to add, something y'all were talking about earlier. Evil companionships corrupt good morals. It's like, you know, we always tell our kids, you watch who your inner circle of friends are. You know, as we go out in the world, we're going to have associations with others. We're going to have friendships with others who are not part of the body of Christ and they're part of the world. And our goal as Christians is to rub off on them, which means we in turn have to watch who our inner circle of friends are. Because our inner circle of friends, we're going to get the same value system. We're going to think and talk just like our inner circle of friends are.
That's right. Since I see Tim Carter back there, Tim, what you showed me that Yahoo piece that you had written a scripture down and had put it on the internet. What was your response to that? Or the people that responded to you? What did they say? Do you remember the...
Oh, yeah, I just quoted 1 Corinthians 6, 9, and 10 to the comment section of a news article on Yahoo that appeared to be pro-gay, and probably I got 10 thumbs down for every one thumb up.
And he let me read. I just read the first page, and I quit after that because they were chewing him up and spitting him out.
Not me.
No, the Lord.
That's right. I did not take it personally. Their argument is not with me. It's with the Lord.
And that's another good point.
You know, all I did was quote Scripture.
People don't want to hear that, though, today, do they, Tim?
But they got to read the Scripture.
That's right.
Some of them maybe for the first time.
And, folks, here's the point. Our job is to teach. We may not get them baptized. That's not our job, though, to baptize them. We want that to happen. Our job is to teach them. If we don't teach these people, they have the right to come back and say, well, you never said anything to me. If we teach them, they may not like it, but they can't, on the day of judgment, they can't come back and say, hey, you didn't tell me. Yes, Brother Smith. think we have got too much time on our hands, really. People have put... Jimmy's up here snickering. Too much time. We put so much time into this entertainment and doing all this. If we would put our hands to the plow and do the work, we'd be so tired, those people in Hollywood wouldn't get that many people watching them. Do you agree with me, Tink? And this is true. This is why we've got to be stronger than they are. And that's what we have to be. We have to be the strong ones. We allow too many of the world to tell us, to dictate what we do. We need to be dictating to them. We need to show them the truth. But you're right. We're not of the world, but we're in the world. And we have to show the people the gospel. We have to do it. Anyone else have a comment? No. Marvin said our top leaders don't help us, and that's very true. It's very true.
Historically, the drift started in the 1950s, right after World War II, with what's called social engineering. And that started with a man by the name of John Stuart Mill to devise a home totally different from what's called mom and dad and the children. Now the home can be anything and everything, and they use that as an experiment to try to prove that you can create an ideal society without the traditional Ozzie and Harriet home. Okay? So the failure started with this educating of, we're going to create this utopian society and get out of world wars. And what happened is, it backfired. Every bit of it backfired. That's when Dr. Spock, Benjamin Spock, came out with, you don't say no to your child, you don't whip your child. And right before he died, what did he do? He recanted everything he said at the beginning of the social engineering revolution in the 1950s. We're just seeing the product of what's been taught in colleges and universities for the past 60 years. This is just the iceberg tip of what had been taught all the way back to the 50s. Everybody remembers the drug culture? Everybody remembers the 60s in this room that's of any age. Okay? It was anti-authority from the start. Vietnam. Everybody remembers Vietnam in this room? Okay? What happened in Vietnam? You don't trust your government. You don't trust your school system. You don't trust mom and dad. Make love, not war. Be your own man. And that's what happened. And now you've got the baby boomers in the White House and in Congress and in the Senate. They're now the movers and the shakers that grew up in that environment. And we're all rubbing our heads and saying, what's happening to our country? It started 50 years ago. And they're teaching this stuff as relativism in the colleges and universities, that there is no such thing as absolute truth. You are your own God. Do your own thing. And that's where we are. And until this country gets their belly full of it, we're not going to change anything except on a grassroots basis. It's going to be an individual to an individual change. And the Roman Empire failed because of what this country is doing. That's sort of my take on what Brother Mitchell's asking the question. Well, I was a part of the social engineering project. It was to create a utopian society. And it didn't. Because the only utopian society you're going to have is heaven. That's all you're going to have is utopia. Down here, you're going to have sin, and you're going to have consequences with it. So, I've had to study that in psychology when I was at Freed. And then you take what's happening in the church. You just take the drift that's happened in the church. That's just a microcosm of what's happening in our society. If you told me that there would be a day in which people in churches of Christ would tolerate some of the things that, when my dad was first started preaching, it's like, okay, marriage, divorce, and remarriage, and homosexual marriage, and whatever, and women preachers, and instrumental music. I've told you, you're crazy.
But folks, that is the world you're living in right now. That's it. It started back in the 50s, right after World War II. And until we learn the history, we won't repeat it.
That's right. And we don't listen too well, do we? Okay, I'm going to have to hurry up here. I've got the first bell. Number 13, and I'm going to quickly go through these. And like I said, I've got the scriptures. Wait till you're able to support a wife to marry. It's good advice. Yeah. Number 14, look into the eyes of the person to whom you're speaking. How many people are not willing to do that today? If you don't have a problem, you can look straight in somebody's eyes. You don't have to worry about that. The trouble of it is, there's too many people got their fingers in the cookie jar and they don't want to say no, no, no. Number 15, save when you're young and spend when you're old. Number 16, never run into debt unless you can see a way out again. Number 17, good company and good conversation are the sinews of virtue. Now, you think about this older man telling this younger guy this. Number 18, your character cannot be essentially injured except by your own acts. Number 19, if anyone speaks evil of you, let your life be so that no one believes him. Great advice. Number 20, when you retire at night, think over what you have done during the day. Number 21, if your hands cannot be employed usefully, attend to the culture of your mind. And number 22, read these rules carefully and thoughtfully at least once a week. And of course, I think about 1 Timothy 4:15, when Paul was telling Timothy, he says, be diligent in these things, give thyself wholly to them, that thy progress may be manifest unto all. Now then, all of these things, and you know, you could spend a long, you know, many, many nights on this particular lesson. But you know the interesting thing about this older man talking to this Abram? You know this Abram. The man's name is actually James Abram Garfield, the 20th President of the United States. And if I remember my history a little bit right, Jimmy, wasn't it Brother Garfield that preached over here at Greenbrier? At Mooresville. So when I was reading this, you know, it really struck me because here we're right smack dab in Limestone County where this man that had been given the advice has lived or has preached. Really stuck in my mind. So when I read that, I thought, that's what I'm going to use for class. Hope I haven't bored you. I've got the scriptures, the other scriptures that I did not read on the paper, so, and if we need more, we'll make more copies. But thank you so much for allowing me to teach the class tonight. I appreciate the elders. Appreciate Jimmy for letting me have it. So y'all, if you're visiting with us, we're just tickled to death that you're here. We hope you'll come back and be with us.